Hey guys, it's Wes.
And Tommy's here too.
And God, we didn't know how much exactly that we had talked the last time, but I guess we were just so delirious from sleep. We just kept on talking until we got through with what we were doing.
So, yeah.
So in part three...
I think this is your first three-parter, isn't it?
I think my coming out was a two-parter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it might be my first three-parter.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. So we will continue on with our philosophy questions, and this will be the last one for this time, and we will definitely give everybody a break from mental thought until we do something like this again.
We'll come back really gay next time, I swear.
Ta-da! So, all right, y'all. Have fun. Okay, we're back after a short break of eating cereal and drinking strawberry milk and peeing.
Yeah. And bickering at each other because I have my phone out too much.
Right. Okay, ready to dive in?
Yes. I was going to think of something clever, but I'm like, I'm still like picking up the pieces of my skull of that Mobius strip comment I made.
Awesome. Okay, number 7. Is it possible for a human to fathom the true depths of reality and existence?
No.
Would this need an understanding of why humans exist?
The reason why humans exist is easy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And from my perspective, the reason that we exist is that we don't have one. We are the end result of billions of years of evolution and of people's lizard brains telling them to bump uglies and make more humans that bump uglies.
Have you ever watched The Cosmos?
No.
In the actual timeline of existence.
Do that in the mic next time.
No. So when you have this like really huge timeline of existence, think of it as multiple layers because the screen, the TV screen was just too big to like have a continuous timeline. As time got up to the top, we were just a small sliver of this existence being humans. Just a very, very small sliver.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say over billions of years.
I mean, even the microbes that started human existence, that started life on Earth, are our evolutionary ancestors.
Is that the little... fat things with the like snout thing, the microbes,
microscopic organisms.
Yeah,
I mean technically, yeah. I can't recall what they look like because no one's ever seen them because they're all dead.
Oh no, there's pictures of like the little. I can't remember what they're called. They're like
amoebas,
cell elephants or cells,
elephants,
something like that. But, I mean, they're like little cute things. I mean, they're kind of gross, but they're a little fat, and they have little snouts on the front of their face. And
a water bear?
Maybe.
Those still exist. They're technically immortal.
Hmm. Like cockroaches?
No. Water bears can live with that. Unless they are killed, they will live forever.
Hmm. So...
just like certain species of jellyfish.
So we as... well, I mean... so I guess that comes into question of where does our perception stop? Like what is the actual limit of even the smartest human being? Where does the line, where is that wall that he or she would run into where he could not get past anything after that?
I mean, anything we define as supernatural is technically, by definition, beyond nature, therefore beyond our perception.
Ghost type things.
Yeah, I guess.
You must be sleepy now because
a little bit. I've had my dinner. I'm a little bit sleepy.
You cannot shut down now.
I'm doing my best. Like, I'm in a warm blanket. My belly is
Well, take the
cold.
Damn blanket off of you.
Like, I'll be cold and analytical.
I mean, that's what most analytical people are, is cold. I am hoping that Atlanta is not about to end up in the dark.
Yeah, we just had a big power flicker.
Surge. There's another one. So,
well, it didn't look like, it looked like the lights flickered, but they...
Well, the stuff over there is on a battery backup.
Ah.
Like my computer in there is on a surge protector.
And it didn't look like it messed with the litter box either.
Yeah, because I think it might be...
We have a litter robot. It's not nearly as cool as it sounds.
It's shitty. Yeah.
Do you hear it ticking?
Well, it must have... It did affect the pooper box because it's running now. So going back to the question, obviously our mind has limitations of what it can do.
Mm-hmm.
What it could perceive. So you actually think that our brains are good up to the line of supernatural? Do you think there are things that are, as it gets closer to the line of supernatural, that we probably just haven't been able to wrap our brains around yet, that I mean, are part of existence? But
there's
we
a
just
difference
can't.
Between conception and perception. Perception is like something that's actively happening around us that we can understand with our senses. To conceptualize something is to like indulge in fantasy, is to like think about something that's outside of your normal lexicon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I want to ride on the back of a dragon. That can never and will never happen. Sorry, guys. But you can still understand and comprehend it because it you can facilitate it in your mind.
Okay.
Sorry, my mind just shat that out. I don't know what that was. What's
okay.
wrong with my mic?
No, I'm just getting to where you can, except don't breathe in it.
I'll breathe super hard.
Stop. Number 8. What is
Did we finish that question?
I mean, well, you said that we could not understand why humans exist.
No, I didn't say that we can't understand why humans exist. I'm saying there's no reason.
Okay.
We are the logical conclusion of evolution.
Conclusion?
At this point, we are the conclusion.
Okay. So then it was like, is it possible for a human to fathom the true depth of reality and existence?
And that's why I said, we have to compare perception and conception. Perception is the idea of feeling it with your senses. Conception is, even if you couldn't feel it with your senses because it doesn't exist, you can still visualize it. You can still understand it in a way that you can interpret it via your senses, even if you never actually experience it. And if there are things that fall outside of those two categories.
Okay.
Like trying to explain what nothingness is like. We will never experience nothingness because there's always sound, always something touching us, always a temperature, always a tummy rumble, always needing to blink. There's
always
those things. Exactly. We're always experiencing something, even if our brain is tuning it out. We're just always absorbing information. So we will never be able to comprehend nothingness.
Would you say that someone that is blind and deaf be more close to realizing nothing than the rest of us were?
Possibly, unless there are other...
That's two senses of the five.
Unless their other senses overcompensate.
Well, they have to. Because Helen Keller, the way Helen Keller talked to her aide, that I can't think of her name right now, was that her person still used sign language, but it was in the palm of her hand. So Helen Keller used her hand to listen and see. So the way she would sometimes she would, like, if the person did not know how to do sign language, Helen Keller would actually put her hand over the person's mouth
and feel and what they were saying.
Feel the lips moving.
Exactly.
So her hand became her ears and her eyes.
But they were still understanding existence. Like, they were still, she could still feel with her hand. She could still smell. She could still taste. And she could still conceptualize what someone was talking about, even if she couldn't experience it with her own senses.
But that doesn't go back to my question.
Are they closer to nothingness?
Are they closer to realizing nothingness than we would be with all five of our senses being?
I'd say there. Closer, but still light years away. Because even that, you'd still, even if you were a quadriplegic and who were blind, deaf, mute, and didn't have a tongue and didn't have a nose.
Well, what do you mean didn't have a tongue?
Like, you can't taste. You have no concept. You have no senses.
Mm.
Your body will still react to things.
But would you know it would?
Because your brain's still functioning.
Well, your brain is still functioning, but you can't feel it. If you are totally paralyzed and you have no feeling,
your organs
in your limb,
like
your internal organ,
you get a stomachache.
Well, yeah, you could.
I just don't think there's any way other than death for a person to conceptualize, genuinely conceptualize, or perceive anything that's outside of their five senses. Because that's how we experience the
world. Which would
be
nothing.
That would be nothingness. And then anything that exists outside of our senses, like, think of it, the idea of a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
There's visual. There's a little cute thing on a white sheet. There's a temperature shift when it passes through your
a
body.
A little thing in the white sheet. Okay, yeah, we're in the South, but, you know,
Yeah. but yeah, you have that shift in temperature when it passes through you. There's the moving of the chair. There's the rattling of chains. Those are all things you perceive when you think of ghost.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're like, a human cannot comprehend something that is totally outside of their senses. They have to be able to rationalize it through their senses.
Mm.
So in my opinion, no, there's no way to, if we're talking about reality, things that are real, that we have to determine whether or not we're talking about something that we can perceive.
Okay.
Or maybe something that we can't perceive or conceive through our senses just isn't real at all. Which is why, in my opinion, that most of what is supernatural is not real. Because there's always the attachment of senses to things that are, by definition, unable to be sensed.
So we'll move over to the next.
Moving on.
Push forward. What is the best path to find truth? Science, math, art, philosophy, or something else entirely?
I'll let you answer that one first.
Path to find truth. So I think all of these questions to me have other questions that go along with them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, like, what is the meaning of truth? So there's a philosophical question around what truth is and what makes truth truth. We have to figure out what is truth. And then we have to figure out how do we get there. What's the, there's a thing for philosophy that you have to go through to figure out.
Miles and miles of bullshit.
No. Was it deduction? Like, mm-hmm. The power of deduction? Like, what do you go through to consider something true? Like, have you not gone through that whole A equals B or the whole deduction thing?
No. Or maybe if I did, it was a long time ago.
Okay. So one of the podcasts that I listened to was a class at Oxford. And the lady had to explain this, like,
table of deduction or table of whatever, and it was like, you know, does A always equal B, or can you get to C by use of A and B or whatever? And she went through all these different scenarios explaining how just by saying A and B did not actually mean C was true. Like, how do we... So first we have to figure out what exactly is... I'll cut that out if I hear it.
I felt that on the couch.
So figure out first what you need to have a truth of. Your eyes have glassed over.
No, I'm
listening.
I cannot
believe that your eyes have glassed over.
I'm listening. It's my contacts, I swear.
Whatever.
They're old. They're dried out.
I've never seen you in your glasses, so.
You have.
No, I have not.
They're here, I think.
They are not. They should not be. So what do we need to know the truth about? How do we get there? What vessel do we take to get there? Do we go about using science? Do we go about using math to reach that? I don't really know what art... I mean...
Art is the expression of the human psyche.
Okay.
It brings to light that which we find beautiful, or that which we find grotesque, or that which we find exciting or shocking, and really gives us the truth of the human experience, in my opinion.
But do we find truth through art?
Depends on your what you mean by truth.
Okay.
Like, is truth 2 + 2 = 4? Or is truth, what do we find beautiful?
But just because it's beautiful.
Am I going to bring fucking Plato into this?
Yes. It's a philosophy podcast. So
Plato, his treatise on beauty, to boil down a lot of annoying gay screeching, comes back to the idea of what we find beautiful points us toward what we value. The idea of beauty is almost universal. It's almost like, not like finding something attractive or finding someone sexy.
It's the
excuse me, I'm sorry. It's finding what we value, finding what is good, finding what is virtuous, finding what is moral.
Okay.
And finding what elicits happiness and contentedness. While what is ugly is discontent, anger, frustration, confusion, immorality, etc. So art elicits beauty, or art elicits ugliness. It can be shocking. It can be grotesque. It can be, like I said, straight up ugly. But that is still a clue into what we value. It's a clue into a metaphysical truth that may or may not be grounded in facts and figures, but is still just as true as anything because it's consistent and verifiable. Like, consider the idea of a Renaissance painting of a beautiful woman. There's actually this painting. She's nude and holding a mirror to herself. The painting is entitled Vanity. And there has been feminist, at the very least, criticism of the idea of calling a woman vain when, in fact, the entirety of her quote-unquote existence is to be leered at by straight men in her nudity and her beauty. So why is she villainized for finding herself beautiful when her sole purpose is to be beautiful? And however, it's still a trope we see. The beautiful woman who recognizes her own beauty when her sole purpose is to be beautiful is vain, is shallow. It's a metaphysical truth that stands the test of time that we will perceive because of our good friend lizard brain. Certain things about what is good based on what is visually appealing. morality affects beauty and beauty affects morality.
Well, you know my stand on morality. I have a deep belief that no one can come up to me and tell me that something that I'm doing is immoral.
I mean, what if you're like...
Morality...
crushing kittens' heads while wearing a pair of high heels.
Well, that's just evil.
It's from a movie. But you're establishing a standard of morality.
I mean, you... Like...
But if you, I say that I'm doing... Could you walk up to someone else and say what they're doing is immoral?
No, not really.
Even if they're crushing cats' heads with their high heels.
I mean...
Is what they're doing evil? Or can
think,
we even
think,
say
I
it is?
I think it's evil, but I mean... What am I... Is that their belief that something like that is fine?
Or what happens with human sacrifice or cannibalism or ritualistic rape? Can we say that those are immoral or abhorrent or evil?
They're abhorrent, yes.
But can we call them evil?
I think they're evil, yeah.
But are they? Is what they're doing immoral? Even if it's like a rite of passage or something they must do in order to propagate their own ideas of good and evil in their own culture.
There are many people in this world that say just because we live as who we are, it's immoral.
It's immoral?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. And they are wrong.
Exactly.
That's why my morality, I wouldn't even call it utilitarian. Like, it's based on compassion, I guess.
I'm going to say that it's wrong for you to like lay on your back right now. Under that blanket.
I'm sorry, my neck hurts.
In the dark.
There's one light on. I'm fine. I'm actually in the zone now.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm not going to sleep. Until later.
So.
My brain is fully recovered from all those high-level ideas.
So, is
Fuck,
the.
You
is,
still won't get that reference.
Is there a best path?
No.
I mean, to me, science is so full of math. That you can't really have one without the other.
Math is full of art as well.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, art. You have art with math because you have geometry.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
curves.
Have, and depending on what you mean by art. Art can just be the inspiration that causes you to seek out something mathematical.
And I mean, when you have this person that goes into an art museum and they say all this shit like, oh, this field of blue is blah 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 blah.
Like
is that
me?
Not is that not philosophical?
Is that me? Is that person me?
If you do that, I'm going to beat you. I'm going
Have
to
you
throw
ever heard
I'm
me?
Going I'm going to sling my 16-ounce Coke at you.
Yeah, with your like 3XL t-shirt with Big Bird on it, it says attitude is everything, your ass hanging out your denim shorts,
mm-hmm.
like full trailer trash moment.
Yeah,
but
when you have this person that goes up to a say that there's a big framed 10x10 piece of art on a wall, but really it's just painted red on one side and white on the other.
It exists. That painting exists.
And this person comes up and says, "Well, this is the two sides of our realities that are warring against each other. One is." You know, evil and angry and mad and white is just pure.
And that'll be $2 million for this painting.
Right. Is that not philosophical?
Oh, it's of course philosophical. It ties directly into issues of class struggle and ideas about...
Carry on.
About personal beliefs and personal values about what a bland painting is worth to you.
Okay.
And like I said, art fits into math because you have to have a reason. There has to be something that inspired you to go find that next big mathematical idea.
Well, there's also...
And math is purely functional. In my opinion, math is purely functional. It exists to answer questions about reality. And if we equate, is it art as a representation of beauty... And therefore, art and beauty are synonymous. Therefore, math is merely the attempt of man at understanding beauty.
Okay. Well, when I think
put that on a fucking bumper sticker.
when I think of art and math. I think of, like, if you see somebody with an easel standing on this bridge and they're going to paint something and they hold their thumb up to this thing.
And they're wearing a beret.
Right. And, you know, that's like trying to fit something into a dimension. Mm-hmm. That's using, like, that's using scale. That's like, you know, is this 1-to-1 or is it like, you know, 1-to-10 or?
Oh, I'm not denying that art and math are intertwined. My main point, getting back to the idea, is that all three of them are deeply interconnected.
Right.
Like philosophy, I mean, for art, philosophy, math, and science. And you can even include religion and philosophy, where all of them are so interrelated and they're all trying to rationalize, validate, or invalidate each other at all times, that it's impossible to live life purely mathematically, purely scientifically, purely artistically, or purely philosophically. Because if you live your life like that, you're stupid and going to die.
I think of these as like the houses of our lives. Like science is like the Gryffindor, or like math is like the Hufflepuff.
Maths are not Hufflepuffs. I'm a Hufflepuff, and I'm definitely an artsy fartsy bag.
Are you really a Hufflepuff?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
What would you say I am if you were to pick?
I would say John's a Slytherin.
John is a Slytherin in the most respectful way possible.
Am I a Hufflepuff or am I a Gryffindor?
Gryffindor. I'm a Hufflepuff.
What's the other house?
Ravenclaw.
Oh, do I know any Ravenclaw? I don't.
Probably Patrick.
I can see Ryan as a Hufflepuff.
A Hufflepuff alongside me.
Okay. Number 9.
How many questions are there?
There's 11 regular questions and one deep question.
I'm going to have a stroke.
Number 9. Is there inherent order in nature, or is it all chaos and chance?
I mean, there are certain portions of order in nature. For like take up a tree, for example.
Okay.
It has specific ways in which it receives and creates some nutrients. It has certain ways that its cells operate in order to have a functional tree. That, if you can consider that order, where the tree ends up, where it will grow, can also be considered order, because over time it has evolved to exist in a very specific environment. But there are elements of chaos in all of it. Random mutation in the cells of a tree, where in fact on the side of a river it starts to grow, whether it lives or dies.
I would think, I look at, say, a sunflower. When you look at the inside of a sunflower, like the seeds, isn't that representational of the Fibonacci?
I suppose so, yeah.
Or like a nautilus?
Nautilus shell?
Yeah. It's more like, it's like a Fibonacci sequence. Mm-hmm. Or
consider like the evolutionary path between the Madagascar hawk moth and its daylily. They have evolved to coexist. He's purring so loud on my lap. They've evolved to be so perfectly codependent on each other for the other's survival that you consider that to be order, how the two must exist in a very specific fashion in order to continue existing. But what happens if one didn't end up right? What happens if one moth's proboscis is too short and it starves to death? That's an element of chaos.
We have chaos in our own existence.
Chaos is inevitable.
When you have a child that is born with cleft palates, and I mean, there's like barely a separation from, like, say, their mouths and their nasal passages or even their brain. Or when you have a child that is developing in its mother's womb and for some reason the heart is outside the body, where there is supposed to be order, or we have come to, I guess, take order for granted, some chaos is thrown in.
But it's random. It's just the way things operate. And sometimes order can create chaos. Sometimes those natural functions can develop, can trip over themselves, and chaos springs out. Because order takes maintenance. And as soon as there's a glitch in the system, chaos spreads in and destroys order.
But would we say that order is inherent?
Order is the absence of chaos, in my opinion.
Well, yeah.
So it's... Shit, I just lost my train of thought. All aboard the dipshit train. Conductor Tommy. Is that the train that you were trying to get into station earlier?
Yes.
All right, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Okay. Sometimes I'm a dumbass and I don't understand. Because, you know, my stretch of vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Define inherent.
Inherent?
Mm-hmm.
Is that which has meaning in and of itself. Like if something is inherently
evil.
Yeah, if something is inherently evil, it is in its core, in something that is completely immovable from its existence. It is therefore evil. Like it's a meaning. Like X thing is inherently Y. X and Y must be linked at their core. Can we move on from this fucking question?
You don't like this question?
I know. I get this question. I'm tripping over my words. It's like trying to sprint through a forest of like bullshit spaghetti. Every noodle keeps grabbing you as you walk past. And then it's like,
Vermicelli.
I could be asleep right now.
Macaroni.
Yeah. With no sauce, with no marinara. It's just wet, sloppy al dente pasta.
Number 10.
Okay.
What in life is truly objective and not subjective?
Nothing. Abso-fucking-lutely nothing. I think all things in life are subjective because even if we look at it with our eyeballs, everyone's eyeballs are different.
So objective is?
Objectivity is something that is irrevocably and irreversibly true.
Okay.
That no matter how you look at it. Like
A is
like
always A.
Here's an example. An objective statement is it's 80 degrees outside today. A subjective statement, it would be, it's so hot out, or it's perfect temperature.
Mm.
The fact of the matter is that it is measurably 80 degrees. However, your response to that 80 degrees, be it that your body feels that it's very hot or that it's perfect temperature, is subjective.
Okay.
Because it's an individual. Are you done with me petting you? You just want to sit nearby?
So, are you saying that nothing in life is truly objective?
Yes.
Okay.
And here's my rationalization. Even if you're looking at, like I said, the example, it's 80 degrees. The reason why you sought that knowledge is subjective. Or the idea that you wanted that knowledge at all is subjective.
Okay.
So, for example, you wanted to know what the temperature was today. Why? Why did you want to know? Or why didn't you want to know? Like, I wanted to know because I wanted to go see if I could have a picnic today.
Okay.
Or because I wanted to see if it was warm enough to go swimming. Or if it was going to rain. Or I want to take the force kayaks. I just wanted to know. All of those reasons for knowing that information are subjective. Therefore, the subjectivity is translated onto the objective statement itself. Therefore, because objectivity is the absence of any level of subjectivity, even that, it's almost like my dad always used to say, a drop of vinegar will ruin a whole gallon of milk. So that little touch of subjectivity destroys the idea that anything is fully objective. Okay, your turn. Your thoughts.
There's nothing really that I can add to that. I mean...
Do you disagree?
I would say knowledge itself. Like, would that not be subjective? Because wouldn't we want to know that? To us, as a human being, it would be subjective. If it's true, then it's totally objective.
Mm-hmm.
That cat is gray. Okay. I can't refute that because it's true. The knowledge of
Here's the twist. If we're talking like that, I think he had pee on his feet and he just stepped on my legs.
Well, that's great
because I feel wet.
Well, could you go ahead?
Shit, I had the like hottest take. Say what you said again.
I said all knowledge is kind of subjective to an individual human being.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Oh, I got it. So, for example, if you were to look at that cat and say that the cat is gray, that is based on your perceptions. A person who is blind would never, ever be able to comprehend. Say they were born blind. Not only what the cat looks like or even the concept of the color gray, they'll never even be able to conceptualize it.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, does that make your perception of the color gray subjective? Because it's personal to you. See,
I guess it would.
See, everything is subjective. Because you saw it with your eyeballs when someone else possibly couldn't even conceptualize the color gray or what a cat looked like. Are we boring you to absolute death, Dante?
He does look like he is just over it.
He looks like a little Buddha.
Okay. Number 11. There has always been something. Before there was something.
No, we're not going through this
one
again.
Come on. No. There has always been something. Before there was something, there was only nothing. Which do you think is more likely?
The previous, because as we talked about earlier, there was always something because of the Mobius strip and multiple layers of realities because there's no technically beginning, nor is there an end.
I should have took that one out because that is a lot like the other one.
But I mean,
dun, dun, dun.
Here's question 12.
It's deep question.
Is it going to be deeper than my Mobius strip?
I don't know.
Let's find out.
I mean, I called these deep questions because when I read them, I was like, what? But, I mean, for you, it might be, oh, this is nothing. You know.
Don't give me that much credit.
I give you a lot of credit.
Too much sometimes.
Know thyself, in quotes, is an ancient concept going back much further than Socrates and is at the root of much of philosophy. With that in mind, what are the most important things to learn about oneself, or is all self-knowledge equal?
Fun fact, before we get into that, you know that Socrates never wrote anything down?
Was he even literate?
I'm not sure, but everything we know about Socrates as a person was cataloged in his dialogues by Plato.
Right. Well, so, his didn't Plato, was it Plato or was it Aristotle that wrote down the proceedings of the trial?
I'm pretty sure that was Plato.
Was it Plato of Socrates' trial?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, know thyself. That is basically just the conscious awareness of your strengths, your weaknesses, and knowing who you are and your own limitations. In my opinion, not all self-knowledge is important. My idea is there are three pillars to having a happy, successful life: contentedness, humility, and self-awareness. Contentedness is the idea of recognizing pain is inevitable, pleasure is something you can seek, and knowing the difference and balancing the two is paramount to existence. Humility, recognizing your own limitations, recognizing that you are not invulnerable. Self-awareness, know that your mind will try to lie to you. Be willing to change your mind, but also be ready to defend yourself and your points in the free marketplace of ideas. I think those three are the most important. Knowing that I'm a Pisces who likes long walks on the beach doesn't really help anybody. Or it's about knowing your flaws and knowing that, like I said earlier, your lizard brain just wants to keep you alive. It will lie to you so that you will eat, drink, and fuck. That's all it cares about. Keeping you alive, you can pass on a little packet of genetic material. So it's the, I think that, like I said, contentedness, humility, and self-awareness, knowing what makes you happy and what makes you suffer and how to balance the two, knowing how to understand yourself in a way that teaches you that you are vulnerable. Number three, knowing when to shut up, when to be self-critical, but also when to say, no, I believe me right now. I think my self-perception is valid. So yeah, I don't think that all self-knowledge falls into those three categories, and I think a lot of it is kind of irrelevant.
Okay.
And sometimes it can become tedious and taxing and can become overwhelming, knowing, like, being so self-involved. I think there's a basic you need to know about yourself so that you can correct yourself when your lizard brain, your own selfishness, your own trauma tries to creep up on you and take control.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you?
I think the most important thing to learn about myself would be what I need to survive. Am I able to survive given whatever comes along? If we want to use pop culture, would I be, if something along the lines of The Walking Dead happened, would I be able to survive? Would I be able to be in a group like the one led by Rick Grimes and, you know, survive in a town or a settlement that's starting fresh in a brand new kind of world? Just because I grew up in the country and I drank water from a well and I went to the bathroom at an outhouse, and most of our food that we ate vegetable wise came out of a garden, does that make me a survivor? I don't think so.
I mean, you've lived long enough to understand yourself.
I don't think I had the smarts that I could have used the water out of that well to, you know, make electricity, or I couldn't have taken, you know, just everyday things around a farm and make, you know, something that would be beneficial to me if I, you know, like there wasn't a Home Depot down the road or something. I think knowing what my limits and my abilities probably would be the most important to me.
And knowing where you can push yourself to be better.
Right.
Can you hear me through your mic? I feel like I've knocked it.
I mean, it's a little far away from your mouth.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I think would be more.
Yeah, totally. Any more questions?
No, that's it.
We did it. Oh my God, I didn't die.
Yeah.
I'm proud of us.
There was 201 questions altogether.
Had we done all
and
of them?
And we haven't even talked about government yet.
Oh God. Oh, my poli sci background's gonna come back.
There is a section on government.
That's fine. We'll do it.
So we have talked about the human condition and human nature, and we've talked about the universe.
We sure have. Should we end it on something gay?
Sure. Oklahoma, where the wind.
I was just going to say, something like wiener or something. You know?
We're just sitting here petting our pussies. So, okay. I think we've bored people enough.
I'm bored.
Are you bored? Like a 2x4 or 4x6?
4x6 for sure.
Okay.
Too thick around the middle to be a 2x4.
Okay. So, as always, you can find me at thegaycountryboy.com. You can send emails containing praise, death wishes.
Just shit all over us, dude.
Just, I mean, like, this stuff bored us to tears. You can send that to thegaycountryboy@gmail.com. So, thank you ever so kindly, Tommy.
Thanks for having this with me. I think.
Did you have fun?
I did. Yeah, I had a blast. I may regret it in the morning. Late now.
Yeah, I mean it's 1:19 in the morning, but you know, we had a nap, so
you should be good.
I slept some. Okay. Love you much. And talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.